in stereo.
Cheers.
Darren, I've been on a peculiar adventure lately.
And what is that adventure, Ryan?
I've been job hunting.
That sounds so strange to hear you say job hunting as in like a permanent...
Like pounding the pavement, looking for work.
Traditional.
Yeah,
like tethered
40 job. Hours a week in an office, not like remote.
I can't even imagine.
And they want me to move to another city. For purposes of this show, I'm not going to say which one, but let's just say that it's not near here. I could move closer, but
it's not St. Cloud.
But there are all kinds of reasons, and most of them can be boiled down to my relationship that are forcing me to look on the other side of the country. But the point being that me, who has not had a real job, quote unquote, as far as they would consider on the census for longer than 9 months out of my entire life, here I go.
And you're talking to the veteran who has had a real job on the census for about 6 years of his entire much longer life. So that's against the trend.
Yeah. It's really interesting to me, though, considering that this is a podcast where we talk about things like distributed communities of people and digital storytelling and the gappers, whoever those people are. Mm-hmm. I'm pretty sure that I'm one of them, but now I'm going to go join the real workforce.
Well, you'll still be a gapper at heart.
Right. It's very interesting, you know, the last time I had to interview for a full-time job, I think they needed me so bad that it was hard to not get the job. But now I'm going into this company that has 500 employees and interviewing for a job there, and they can sort of afford to be very selective about who they let in and when. So I've kind of gone up for one position and didn't really get it, but it's a decent sized company. I guess you would say it's a medium sized company, even though to me it feels gigantic, that they have other departments and other opportunities for me, who basically all of my skills that are relevant to this job are completely self-taught. They are literally not taught in a school somewhere. Working with these open source technologies, working on the internet, you know, you have to change almost everything that you know from the technical perspective. What most people think that I'm good at, I have to learn all over again in 3 years because it changes so fast. When I started doing web pages, I learned HTML and CSS, which was this very new thing at the time, but it was like CSS version 1, I think, maybe at the time, and now we're on CSS version 3, and HTML has gotten 3 or 4 revisions since then, but really that's just the surface. I had to learn a programming language, and JavaScript has become way more important to me, and web services, and knowing how to set up a web server, and on and on and on. That's just the technical part. The soft part of my job, the part that I would consider that you can't just teach yourself over the course of a weekend, to me is something that, you know, makes me marketable, as it were. And that's why I've been able to be mostly successful as a freelancer for more than 10 years.
Well, it's pretty tough with the language, the tech language, bridging the gap with people who don't always speak that language, and having someone who can help them get to where they want to go and express themselves in ways that they don't know how to express themselves is a key thing. And I see so much promise for what you do and who you are in that side of it. That is not so much even putting together anything with the technology of a site, but in actually just communicating and in a way interpreting from client or whoever might be on that end of it to the actual goals and actualizing, you know, something through content.
Yeah. So all of this to say, it's been very interesting to sort of like go through this process, talking to a couple of different companies, sort of like looking at what some of the job, how the job postings are structured, because so many of it, for me specifically, coming out of web development, so many of the people that they're looking for are these sort of self-taught people, but then they're sort of asking them to go into these more structured environments. And especially, you're constantly having to talk to your clients or the people that you're dealing with. For example, this company I'm interviewing with, most of their management got hired out of other industries, and they sort of got taught web hosting and, you know, website consulting. And, you know, I want to say that the one guy used to work for like Procter and Gamble or something like that, you know, like a completely unrelated non-technological business, and then decided to get into this sort of like fast moving internet thing. So you kind of have those like two worlds of like all the people that have totally grassrooted themselves and all the other people that who knows how they got there, but they sort of came out of this sort of like corporate workflow, you know, global economy sort of world, and they're trying to smush the two of them together.
Yes.
I just find it very, very interesting dichotomy.
So they've, in a way, they've worked themselves up through a structure and some of the hierarchical things and whatnot that you would expect to come with traditional work environments. And now they're bringing in, you know, they're creating this other structure, but bringing in a lot of people who are unstructured and where they come from and self-taught and, you know, totally outside of corporate world.
Yeah, but there are innovations in the way that workplaces are run, and some of them come out of
that clash.
The idea of co-working that we bring up a lot here,
right,
which I think we've made the argument in the past that co-working is dead. It's become something else now. But the fact that offices are not really highly structured environments anymore, that you can move your desk if you're working on a new project. You know, you don't have like this one cubicle that's your cubicle for all time. And maybe you don't even have the walls between the cubicles anymore. They don't have a specific number of sick days and vacation days. They say, you know the nature of your work, and we're hiring you because you have a brain and you're smart. So if you want to take some time off, just let us know that it's coming up so that we can plan for that.
Really?
Really. Netflix very famously has this same policy. And I do know of other companies that have a similar kind of a structure. Or in a totally different way, I've heard of some companies that they almost have like, I wouldn't say that it's mandatory time off as much as the entire office shuts down for 2 weeks in December. Because none of us want to work then anyway. Mm-hmm. So why should we force like the lowest ranking people to work if all the bosses are going to be taking off? Mm-hmm. So the whole office shuts down for 2 weeks. Except for the guy that runs the server, he has to check in on things every so often, you know? It's hard to say everybody gets this because there are always exceptions.
There's always somebody, right?
Even here, you know, in Orlando, we have the big engineering companies like Siemens. We may have even mentioned this before, but Siemens has done away with structured workspace. They just have like co-working desk kind of space. And you come in and you work in the office when you need to, or you work from home when you need to. You don't have to show up at 9 a.m. unless you have a meeting that you need to be there for. You know, they want you to get your work done. They're not suggesting that, right, you only do 20 hours of work a week or something like that. But the idea of like coming in and punching a clock is not that important in these, like, especially in the knowledge work based jobs. Netflix would be an example of that, where a lot of the stuff is all based on relationships with these media companies and developing the technology and pushing things through this pipeline. And they have a lot of scientists, and I'm sure they have a lot of business people that work at Netflix, for example. And their jobs don't always happen during the hours of 9 and 5. So why should we require you to be there for all of those hours, and especially for whatever it is, you know, 5 days a week, 50 weeks a year, Take time off when you need it. Take a sick day when you need it. Go and be with your family when you need to.
That's funny, looking at how even Full Sail structures our situations there. When I started, we all had dedicated desks, and to an extent, most of us still do. But one of the things that you realize is when you get into that cubicle environment or the environment where you're working right next to other people, the amount of interference that can come with being at work is often inversely proportional to your ability to get things done. And so, you know, there's the role of headphones that can come in really handy. But the whole idea of the way that they have set up their space, where you're not as much confined to the 9 to 5, you know, typical like college hours, but even all the way until 1 a.m. and on weekends and other things too, it allows for more flexibility where, you know, I'll often go into my office and I won't see the other people at a certain time, but they're, you know, we're all kind of sharing that space in a very fluid way. And in a way, we'd almost try to avoid when times that we know that several other people are going to be there if we really want to get our work done. Mm-hmm. So even in a more traditional, like an academic university full-time job type setting, it's still a lot of flexibility and fluidity that's built into that, and you know makes it such that you're not really stopped with your job at 5, but you don't necessarily have to start with it at 9 either,
right?
So to speak.
And you know, in the really really extreme example that I know of, is a video game company called Valve, and Valve, on top of making video games that you download and you play with a controller, they also make a video game store. Basically, when you buy a game, there's a really good chance, especially if it's on a PC, not an Xbox or a PlayStation, but if you purchase a game, you're probably buying it from their store, which is called Steam.
Hmm.
And they sort of made this service for themselves, and a couple other people joined and whatever, but now they sort of have their own quasi Kickstarter kind of a thing going on, where you can vote on a game that you want to see make it into the store, and you can pre-purchase it before it's truly released and beta test it, and all these kinds of things. But so they're this big enabling company, this very visible part of the video game landscape. But the really interesting thing is that when you get a job at Valve, they sort of like put you through the training and they say, here's your computer and here's your desk and it has wheels on it. And then they say, where would you like to go? What project would you like to work on?
Wow.
Anything that's in here.
Wow.
If you can be useful there, we want you. We've hired you. So clearly we have invested in you as a brain, as a person. We want you to live up to your full potential, and that includes you being motivated to work on whatever that is. So it's not to say there are no roadmaps and there's no product owners and that kind of thing,
uh-huh.
But those product owners emerge in a little bit more of an organic way. It's almost like when you go there, you sort of join the community of Valve employees, and then you can take on a project much like you would if we're talking about somebody wants to start a community garden. Nobody gets appointed by the city and says, you will own all of the community garden. Somebody has to represent and be there and be passionate about it and demonstrate leadership and set an example for other people. And so those are going to be the people inside of a company like Valve that are the product owners.
And the more of the people who have benefited from that flexibility themselves, the more they rise up and start making the choices of how their organization is going to be structured, the more likely they're going to be to build that into it, which is pretty promising. So that kind of goes back to that whole flexible framework model that I used to talk about with Urban Rethink and other ventures, but it's a shift from the core, like the set structure that everybody knows where they're going to be at a certain time and what position they are in the hierarchy and everything, that is just people rely on an exactness of positions and roles and things like that, and now having more of the fluidity built into it, whether it's where you sit or what your job is or what project you're working on, you know, kind of following that energy that a lot of, I think, of us gappers, you know, independent creatives have done for a long time.
Yeah.
It's interesting to see that becoming more possible in the work environment. And I think that's why I've been able to do so well with my job, because it is that mid-ground between really being anchored to a set schedule or rigidity that way, but also having the fluidity to sometimes make my own hours, not so much in the classroom, but certainly with grading, and choose where I do my work.
Well, and if you think about it, the reason why you have the hours is because all of these students want to share time between all these teachers. So the system is necessary. If you want to get from A to B, the school has set up this program that you have to go through this class, and this class. And it's not like they have to take them in the same order, right?
No, they actually do.
They do take them in the same order. Okay.
Yeah. Going through, I guess, the same.
Specifically Full Sail, if we're going to talk about them, they only have like, what, a year and a half or 2 year program anyway.
So yeah, it's
so abbreviated.
Get a bachelor's in under 2 years if they really.
It's so abbreviated that they kind of have to put you on the track.
Yes. On the track with the roller coaster.
Yeah. Full Sail is probably a bad example, but the point I was trying to make is that we have those schedules just because when you're talking about sharing resources, i.e. the teacher, then we need that structure in order to get the most out of that relationship. We all agree to show up at this time.
And I think too about the other shared kind of resource of space being an interesting challenge for people. We're so used to being in a space, like in a workplace environment from 9 to 5 or whatever it might be, and then it closes and nothing happens until the next morning. And, you know, one of the things that Full Sail has done out of necessity, mainly because of just the limitations of classroom space, but also because they would say that it's more of a real world environment, particularly for filmmakers and other things, but is to stack classes on top of each other in a day. So you've got almost like a second shift going on until 1 a.m. And that's not just there, too. I have a friend who works for one of the universities in the Georgia system, and he was saying how they're really starting to work at, okay, how are we going to not make new buildings, but use the existing buildings, you know, stacking them up, doing classes on weekends, after hours, and things that are really probably going to benefit a lot of the students as well, because they like that flexibility. And if you have an option to have a night class when maybe that might work better for your child care schedule or who knows what, that you might be inclined to do it. So I think we're going to see more like practical use of space in that way that makes it more efficient.
Well, and then we have sort of like the more distributed models too, where, you know, Stanford puts many of their courses, the lecture portion of the course at least, online for free.
Yeah.
In the, you know, massively open online courses model.
Yeah.
That they realize that even just the lecture is not necessarily the thing that you're paying for.
That's right.
That there's so much more to it. The community of students getting to work on the class projects together, you know, having those resources available to ask questions before and after class, and the sort of like campus resources for sure. Like I can remember when I was living in Ann Arbor, the University of Michigan, they have this entire floor that's probably very similar to what you would recount from your college dorm. Mm-hmm. Where there's like little recording studios and there's little music studios and there's little, you know, 3D printer lab and the, you know, all the different sort of like toys that are down there in the basement that you might, these days you could see at a hackerspace, like,
right.
Like we have here in Orlando, Famalab and Factor, different things like that, where people are, they're pooling these resources together and they're creating these spaces outside of a university setting. So that You know, I don't need to own my own 10,000 square foot shop. I can be a member at one and I can share those things. But sometimes being a student at the university gets you not only the resources, but the people. And the people that have nothing but free time because they're dedicated their entire week to education. That's really powerful when you get all those people in the same space.
Well, and if they're living on campus and they don't have the accelerated schedule like Full Sail does, I mean, you're right. You have the opportunity to collaborate and create some fun things with people right there. With that, you don't have a lot of the responsibilities that you would have out in the real world, so to speak. So it's a good time to explore and try those things. And when you've got the access to all the resources, you don't have to worry about paying for them. And well, of course you're paying for them, but not in the direct way. So that becomes more of a challenge than when you leave the university, because now you don't have that anymore. But the other thing, by the way, that I think Stanford and certainly, you know, other schools do is that just by affiliating with them, by being able to assert yourself or say, hey, I am a student here, or ideally, ultimately, I'm a graduate of this, that it gives you a lot of a benefit in addition to the other ones that we've been talking about. Just that whole validity of, yeah, I belong here and, you know, and I'm a part of this. And again, ultimately, I'm an alum.
Well, and yeah, because that institution has invested whatever it is, 50, 100 years in making that reputation that you can, that when you associate yourself with this thing and you also have the certificate to back it up when that becomes necessary, then you can say, not only do I belong, but I've got the proof.
Yeah, I've run the gauntlet and here's my t-shirt. Yeah, and I think more and more people are, I mean, it's a very fascinating thing to think about, that the core education transference of being in a lecture type thing is not the thing that we're necessarily paying for as university students. And so when you can start realizing that and giving that away, so to speak, it's also part of the common, it's just like, you know, part of the shared community kindness that Stanford is doing in that case, and other universities are as well.
Okay, so just to recap, we've talked a little bit about sort of my adventures in taking on a more traditional space, and then we looked at some new examples of how those traditional spaces are not so traditional anymore. And that sort of led us into the institutional creation of opportunity, if we're going to call it that, and what you get out of it and why it's important, why it remains important, right? Because some people could say, well, why would you go to university anymore? Because you can learn these things online and you can teach yourself this thing and whatever. But obviously there are benefits to it. And there is a way to like accelerate. But now my question is, do we want to dive more into who are the gappers, or do we want to dive more into what are the ways that they are using the resources, either traditional or the new reimaginings of them?
When you talk about the summary, I mean, one of the interesting things that we've done is we've kind of explored the social institution of the workplace and the social institution of the university or educational institution, whatever that might be. And so when we talk about gappers, what I'm really talking about there is people who are others, who are probably not tethered to a traditional standard workplace or a traditional university setting that's, you know, they're full time into it and that's what they do. That they're the whole notion of a gapper is really tied into our social institutions, and that comes, you know, most of my focus has been on work, but certainly in educational institutions it comes with churches and the whole that side of society. It comes with ties to family structures. organizations in the community and different things like that. And so when you are untethered to those things, then you are kind of in that no person's land, then you're an other. And I guess that's what I, you know, think about the core of being a gapper is those many times that you really want to check other when the boxes are there, or you want to write in the margins, well, it's not this or this, but it's this, and this is, you know, why I'm different than your categories that you've created here. So I think, you know, from that perspective, what I've been really fascinated by is how many people are in that sort of other realm. And it can even go, you know, as from political affiliation, it can go into categories of ethnicity and gender, and I mean all number of things. But just feeling like you're in that middle ground, in that gap, that you almost have to explain yourself or find a way to wrap around the structures that are in place, because they can sometimes be a real pain in the neck. I mean, it's easy to have rules set up, and I understand, you know, why people set up rules for, okay, well, you have to be married to rent a car together. But, you know, that's an experience that I had recently. So, So they said, well, she can drive the car with you, but you have to pay extra. And I said, well, it says in your documentation that you do not have to pay extra if you're in this gold club or whatever. And they said, no, that's only if it is a coworker or a spouse. And I'm like, well, what difference does that make, you know? But
yeah, no, that's very interesting. I mean, you know, we were over lunch, we were talking about my, and even your, to a certain extent, relationship status. People are like, are you married yet? Or when are you going to get married? And I go, isn't that special? I've been with the same person for 6 years. That's your answer.
That's a committed relationship.
Yeah. So totally, totally agree that, you know, when the world tries to put you in a bucket, you make a new bucket.
Yeah. And if enough of you realize that you're being pushed out of the bucket or forced into a bucket, then you can start creating whole nother ways of organizing.
Forget buckets, umbrellas. We're going with flasks.
and then I think that's what I'm excited about really pushing forward with some of the research that I'm doing is that I don't think if you think about how all these others are organized, so to speak, they're not organized because they're it's almost like a big sphere, a big cloud of possible relationships. And so this whole cloud, people are existing on opposite sides of each other, and they don't really know or consider the fact that in every one of the, in 360 degrees, 300, you know, every certain direction, there are people that are like themselves. They might be different, totally different ends of spectrums and things, but they're still all in this kind of, this other, this shared identity of, hey, I don't belong in the categories that are typically set up. And so if we can acknowledge that and say, hey, these people that are in the gaps are actually the majority when it comes to it, now suddenly you empower them and society can start answering a little bit more to, you know, the challenges that they face, more so than what we've been doing for the last many decades.
Well, and we can put this link in the show notes over at ouryellowhouse.com. But didn't we see a statistic recently that there were 35% of people are technically self-employed? Am I remembering that right?
Well, I had that tab up here somewhere from back in the day, the Freelancing in America survey.
Yeah, I want to say it was in about the last month. Somebody emailed it to us.
Yes, 34% of the U.S. workforce working as freelancers.
Okay, 34, pretty close.
That's a very interesting point for you to bring up and for me to actually have right here.
It's that goes beyond a rounding error.
And that also is still a very small subset of what we're talking about. Even in like workplace type worked role gappers, that 34% that are freelancers, so to speak, then that doesn't include underemployed people. It doesn't include people who are doing multiple jobs in various. I mean, it might in certain extents, but it could be like the prematurely retired, the people between jobs in some way or another. I mean, there's a tremendous amount of the workforce that is not represented in what you would think would be, again, the 9-to-5 traditional expectations there, or even 9-to-5. Hell, it's been so long since everybody's been 9-to-5 anyway, but having that 40-hour full-time job, 40, 50 hours, whatever it might be.
Or apparently 34 and a half so that you don't have to give out the health insurance.
Right.
Whatever it is. There's a really interesting note, right? As soon as you set a limit on something that above this limit means group A and below this limit means group B, then someone is going to exploit that in both directions. I will put you just above this limit or I will put you just below it. And therefore you are included or excluded from so many things just because somebody in a room somewhere said this is the line.
I don't know the specifics, but I talked to a friend of mine yesterday who works as an adjunct, and she was saying that because of the Affordable Care Act and some provisions there, that they've made it so that the adjuncts have to be accounted for like, I don't know if it's like 2.5 hours per hour that they're in the classroom or something like that, that accounts for them in addition to their hours that they're paid for. I don't know if this makes sense at all, but essentially what she was saying is that they have cut back on how many hours the adjuncts can be paid for because of this multiplier that they've put in as a result of some of the societal change this way. And so she was lamenting that she kind of lost her main source of income or reduced dramatically because of factors just like you're talking about.
Yeah. Well, the world is changing rapidly. I think that is more evident all the time. And there are certain people that are trying to make sense of it, and there are certain people that are surfing the waves, right?
It's kind of always going to be the case, I would imagine, that our support structures lag behind, you know, what people's needs are. So our institutions are still built to accommodate needs from, you know, 20 to 60 years ago and or more. And so now I think the key is to really examine, okay, if you are in some of these gaps, you know, where are you getting your needs met, and how can society and nonprofits and whatnot help to band together and find ways of addressing these affiliation needs and resource needs and other things we've even talked about today that a large number of people have. And without it, when you're kind of in this isolation, you're a solopreneur or you're in solitude, whatever it might be, it feels much more difficult to rise up and conquer out of that position, because so much of initiative is tied to that social side of things too, and having collaborators and building that bridge from what's possible, whatever your potential is, and achieving that potential, realizing that potential on a day-to-day basis, let alone on big projects.
Yeah, I mean, for me, you know, this is one reason why I started a community for creative people, and I didn't try to put a pigeonhole of technology workers or freelancers or people that work from home or people that work in offices or people that, you know, work in one particular way or another, that we just sort of said, if you think you belong, then you belong. And we had this pretty successful meetup, I would say, for 6 or 7 years, and then I got, you know, busy and other things sort of took priority, but it was a really good run, the Florida Creatives happy hours that we had here. Mm-hmm. And it ended up, I think, in as much as I could have an effect on the lives of, you know, 400, 500, 1,000 people, created a network and created opportunities that maybe they would have happened, maybe they wouldn't have happened had this not existed, but we were there to sort of create that magnetic pull around something. And then I think, you know, continued that work when we had Urban Rethink and those mm-hmm. space-oriented things that tends to crystallize things in a weird way, sometimes good, sometimes, you know, hard to understand. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to say bad, but just some people, they tend to focus all on the space and not on the community.
Right.
But I feel like that's been a really good sort of like mission to be on, is to help people find resources and create a network and just sort of know that they're not alone in being alone.
And I think ultimately that's what I want to achieve through kind of synthesizing the gappers and understanding what the gappers are. It's like, okay, now that I understand what they are and hear from a wider range of them about what their needs are, is finding a way to get them plugged in. I mean, I think that's the ultimate goal, is like, how can somebody who wants to make a difference, whether it be for themselves or for the economy or for their community, how can they know where to go and get, find like-minded people and find collaborators and some of those folks that we were talking about that you would find at a university or even in a job, in a workplace, but how can they kind of come together and what can we do to attract them and empower them, you know, once we have attracted them?
Okay. I feel like we're leading up to a call to action. So I'm going to take a first crack at it.
Okay.
Here is a possible call to action. Given that the dogs are about to start barking because we see the mailman, that is not part of the call to action, but it's going to happen. Oh, that wasn't so bad.
Wow.
So here we go. Take two. Given that co-working is dead because now there are these, like, you know, more institutional level co-working spaces coming around to help certain kinds of people, right? That sort of like wonky kind of crystallization. Okay.
Is it profit oriented? Would you say?
I wouldn't even say it's so much that it's profit oriented as just it's focused in a way that in order to get something going that's big enough and yet sustainable, they have to sort of like weed certain people out. It creates a bucket, right?
Yeah.
And I think for me, that's why co-working is dead, is because it has changed into a specific kind of resource sharing among a specific group of people, as opposed to something very grassroots. I'm not saying that it doesn't exist anywhere.
Yeah.
If you disagree with me, that's allowed. But I think that what we could achieve in the last 7-10 years with co-working is not necessarily a mission anymore. That the continuing mission, right? Our continuing mission to seek out new life and new planets and whatever it happens to be, new life and new civilizations, I think that's the word, that has to remain around the churn. The people coming into, and specifically since we're kind of focusing on work here, coming into the workforce, creating businesses, looking for opportunities, you know, providing resources, sharing knowledge, that there is still a need for those people to network with each other, to have places and times, virtually or otherwise, to gather, uh-huh. to have a conversation, to talk, and hopefully this podcast can be one of those things, and you know, our online presence on some community or other could certainly be one of those going forward, yet to come. Whether that will be at, you know, something like You Are Orlando locally here, but do we own a domain name, Darren, for something more grandiose?
Yeah, we do, but I don't even remember what specifically it is right now. We'll fill in the gap somewhere down the line.
Yeah, it's coming.
The URL is
gap on,
gap off,
gap on, gap off,
thegappers.com.
.com.
Close enough.
So here's my crack at the call to action.
Okay.
A, if you have one of these communities, give us a summary of what you've been up to recently. B, if you're interested in creating one of these communities, don't. Look for one that already exists, because I bet you a lot of money there is one. And if anyone took me up on that bet, I would become a very rich man overnight. One problem we have a lot, specifically here in Orlando, where we have such a transitional population, is that someone will come to town and they will, instead of doing an exhaustive search for all of the cool things to do, they'll just create their own, which is really neat, and it says a lot about the kinds of people that come here. And maybe now that we have reached the co-working is dead, things are crystallizing era, maybe we will see less of that. But it was definitely a trend for a little while that there was this meetup and that entrepreneurs group and this coffee circle and that other thing and this syndicated event and this other thing. Maybe the fact that they are getting more crystallized and more amplified means that we will see less people starting their own thing. But if your community and your physical space has not reached that point yet, reach out to other people. And I tell people this all the time. There's a group of video game developers around here, and they have a monthly meetup. And it's a pretty popular monthly meetup. And they get some local game developers to come and show off their games. It's one of the first time that anyone from the public has seen these games that they're making in the darkened corner somewhere. I was talking to the organizer of it, and he says, yeah, we want to do a conference. And I said, don't. Find somebody who's doing an existing event and ask them for a room. Join your wagon to theirs, and thereby make a wagon train, as opposed to a wagon train of one. If we want these communities to thrive, we have to support the existing communities. You cannot look at someone and assume that they wouldn't be overjoyed to have you join them. You cannot say, well, that's not for us.
Right.
I think that has to be one of the maxims, if we're going to write this down, is that you should offer to help someone before you go and create your own new thing. I can say this for a fact from open source software. All right. There's a whole slew of people out there that are writing their own little code that they only use for themselves. And those are essentially wasted man hours, if you ask me.
Yes.
Then there are the people that they say they understand what open source is, and they understand that it's a good thing. But they don't do that step of going and looking for an existing project. They start their own. And I think sometimes too hastily. So they create this brand new thing, and maybe five people use it, and then that dies. And that can also, not that it has zero value and yet you don't learn anything, but it's not as effective as going to an existing community and being very vocal and very strong in your opinion and saying, I almost didn't help you because I saw this problem. And I have already written the patch that will fix this for you. And it has to be, the way that open source works is that if I give you a patch, you have to accept it, right? I'm gonna skip over into another metaphor really quick. In improv, you always say yes, right? If you reject all of the suggestions coming in, then you're doing stand-up comedy. You are no longer doing a group improvised activity. So in open source, when someone gives you a constructive piece of feedback, usually in the form of working code, something that improves your product, you should take it. Even if you have to make changes in order to truly accept it, they're probably sending you a message that this feature is missing or broken, or I see some use for your software that has not been exploited yet. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to do something new. And every time you say yes and you take on one of those new contributors, you have potentially now not just taken that one piece of code, but taken the potential for their 1,000 contributions going forward. So that is a long way of saying, step one, if you have an existing community, tell us about it. Step two, if you think that one does not exist, don't create one. Go and find one and go help them. That's your call to action. Go and find someone and offer to help them make your community better, whatever that community may be.
Joining forces. It's funny when you're talking about kind of going back to at the beginning and the idea of these community resource centers or plug-in stations or whatever you want to call them. One of the things that we've seen is when they work, it propels people back out into what might end up being a traditional job or a, you know, a tethered work situation. And so, you know, looking at like some of our friends who have recently taken jobs with the organization that you're talking about, and possibly you and, you know, me, in a way, it was through my Gapper relationships that I met the person who I worked with to get my full cell job. It like pulls people in and then it propels them back out. And then when they're ready to come back into something and need it, you know, if they decide they're not ready to be in a particular situation, a work situation, or whatever, they can come back to it and find, you know, churn again and find new possibilities for that particular year or era, and then jump back out into it. So that's one of the things that I'm seeing too here is just how, even as Urban Rethink was one of these places that brought together a bunch of people, and to see where those people are now and how many of them are, you know, back in some sort of a full-time job and in different ways. And often they kind of lose, because they're so full-time and, you know, focused on those things that they don't actually end up contributing as much to the community as they had, you know, before. I mean, I certainly know that from my own experience. But I think I'm just thinking about, you know, bringing things back around to what you were talking about, you know, your current situation. And So how do you think you're going to do that? What's going to happen? I mean, first of all, if you did end up leaving this city and you leave it in a place where you are in a, you know, you're probably going to be being somewhere in a relationship. So you're tied there, you're tied to your work environment, and you're going to an entirely new city, and you're probably not going to have the amount of time that you have here. What do you foresee becoming of you in that situation?
Well, I mean, for people who know me very well, they know how involved I am in the Drupal community, in the world of open source software there, that we have our Drupal podcast that we do, for example. And, you know, I don't see that stopping anytime. So that is not that we created the entire community just by having this podcast, but we're sort of supporting this larger community there that we get, you know, 3,000, 4,000, 5,000 people that listen to some of the shows, and we're spreading information. So that's an interesting thing that I can do, you know, quote unquote, from anywhere. And I will continue to do. And, you know, I think what we're talking about now of having these communities of gappers and people that are sharing resources, creative types, I'm going to look for those wherever I end up, for sure. You know, being involved in the theater here in Orlando, I believe that to be a branch of this, of people, you know, creating new art. You know, I believe that happens just about everywhere in the world. Mm-hmm. So I think it's just, for me, it's based on my own personal interests, where I think I used to take a very general stroke at it. I think if you ask me right now, as I have less free time, as I have sort of quote unquote grown up, then my focus becomes more on a few things that I'm very passionate about, as opposed to a general thing that everyone can sort of join. But I can't predict the future at the same time. Uh-huh. So I'm going to look for strong community wherever I go. And where I find it, if it happens to be, you know, science fiction writers or startup founders or, you know, cupcake bakers, I don't know what that happens to be, but where good community is, you will find Ryan Price.
That sounds like rich material for future podcast conversations.
Yeah.
Chronicling your adventures in New City.
Right. And, you know, I brought up the improv thing really quick, and then it made me think of something. So I want to maybe just hit this really fast. So, you know, the rules of improv, the first and maybe one that anyone can agree on, is to say yes and build on what your partner just handed you. But there's an implied rule underneath of that, which is that your partner has to make the offer in order for you to say yes to it.
Hmm.
So if there's one thing that I can give to people, it's that you have to make the offer. And you have to have the confidence that somebody will say yes to your offer. So there's, you can either be the offerer or the offeree. And if you find yourself being one, make sure that you're ready to, you know, give or take as needed. And that's how we can, you know, make the world better.
Yes, I take that to heart.
Put that on the slide and post it on SlideShare.
All right.
Darren, what are you going to be thinking about and checking out until the next time we hear from you?
Well, I've got my Full Sail adventure that's on my mind, and digital storytelling, and evolving some of the things that I preach into some of the things that I practice to help share the story of what actually goes on in my class. So I'm excited about that. But really, I have been on the sidelines for the better part of the last 4 months with my research, and I'm really looking forward to getting back in and working on outlining the book that I'm working on about the gappers, and getting some intellectual property sewn up with that regard, and also launching the daggum site. I mean, it'd be a nice thing if we talk in 3 or 4 weeks or whatever to have some site where this podcast is available, in addition to the other places. So that's what's on my immediate plate. What about you?
Well, there's a friend of mine that's working on a book that is going to benefit people who build websites, and I've been helping out with the table of contents there, doing some client work. So recently, my website client, Proctor's Theater, up in Schenectady, they refurbished their marquee, the big giant metal sign that's out in the front of their building, and it's now got an LED full color scrolling sign instead of the old school like suction cup and stick letter kind of method. And we actually built them a web interface so that they could update it from you know, any computer with the internet, instead of having to use like a proprietary piece of software to schedule it all. So I feel pretty good about that. And working with some other nonprofits and libraries and stuff like that in the meantime, waiting to hear about my new adventure. And then, you know, causing trouble wherever possible. We just recently had the Maker Faire in Orlando. That was really fun. So I tend to post about that stuff on my Twitter page as Liberator, which is spelled without the last vowel, or on Google Plus as Ryan Price. Pretty much everything that I post, you can at least find a link to it off of RyanPriceMedia.com. It's kind of like my homepage that really, really sorely needs updating.
Yeah, I got some of that going on too. Sorely updating or sorely getting out there into the public once again.
But for the meantime, if you have landed at OurYellowHouse.com, you can send us an email through that site and download some past episodes with Darren and I over like the last couple of years. We've put out at least one a year. So go check those out and gap on.
Cheers.